Welcome to Free College Can Happen to You, where we can answer all your questions about getting college for free.
What's the best SAT prep material?
How do I use the SAT to get free college?
What do I need to do to get scholarships?
Here's your host, Gene Burke with College Prep Genius, the no-brainer way to SAT success.
Hi, this is Gene Burke with College Prep Genius, and I'm really excited today to talk to you about how your child, your student, can ace the SAT. Now, if you've never heard me before, maybe you don't have a little bit of background, but let me kind of tell you why I can teach you how your kids can ace the SAT, because I was able to teach my kids on how to do it. And that is why I've been talking about this subject for several years. Probably about somewhere around 12 years ago, we had no money for college. And, of course, as a homeschooling family with one income, there's not a lot of extra money. And we really did want our kids to go to school. And I had a friend mention to me one day that there was actually lots of scholarship money based on SAT scores and PSAT scores. And this was very intriguing to me, having never heard that before and not having any money. And of course, at the time, I didn't realize that colleges go up on their rankings nationally based on their test scores. So, of course, the higher the score, the more money you get. Of course, you basically make them look good. So today I'm going to talk about, you know, how when after my son and I went through these tests and did a lot of practicing and trying to figure out what works and what doesn't work, he became a National Merit Scholar. And ultimately, we threw away around 7 trash bags full of college offers. This was, anywhere from full ride, free tuition, room and board, grad school money, you know, even money to study abroad in other countries. And so certainly after my daughter got her scholarship money, my friends were ringing me up on the phone asking me, what did you do? And to get all that scholarship money. So that's when I ultimately wrote a book and put together a class, and I've been teaching that for about 10 years. I think one of the biggest complaints that I hear from students, you know, which because I've taught thousands every year for about 10 years, is that when it comes to this test, they feel like, well, I'm not smart enough to pass it, or, you know, I just always run out of time. Or there's no way I can finish. And really, you can't with only about a minute per question if you're going to do it the normal way. But what you're going to learn today is how you or your student can answer every question in 30 seconds or less. You're also going to learn basically how you can tap into this $24 billion pie of scholarship money every year, and of course how easily you can incorporate test taking strategies into your school. Most of you are homeschooled, so it's something that you can add in as an elective, study skills, life skills, prep class. Anyone who's not homeschooled, certainly it's something that they can add into their child's life as well. But I'm going to be giving you a lot of great information today. If you haven't done so already, download the handout at collegeprepgenius.com/ace the SAT radio. So again, that's my website, collegeprepgenius.com/ace the SAT radio. And that handout's really going to help you because it's going to have a lot of questions I'm going to be going over today. And so you'll be able to work the strategies by using them as we talk. Now, I'm also going to be telling you later on how you can download my ebook, 15 Secrets to Free College for a Penny. So let's get right into this. Now, before we talk about the SAT now, you know, everybody knows, of course, you've heard the SAT is changing in the spring of 2016, so a little less than a year and a half from now. So if you want to know more about my take on that, you can go to collegeprepgenius.com/SAT changes. We also have a blog on the new SAT prep classes, Buyer Beware. One of the things you have to be very careful is that a lot of companies out there are talking about, you know, the program they created based on the new SAT. And since the College Board has not released a full-length test, which won't happen until spring of 2015, there's really no way of knowing what they're going to do. Even their disclaimer probably restates 10 times how they really don't know what it's going to end up being, the final product. It's constantly progressing and changing. So be very, very careful when it comes to someone telling you that they have already got the answers to the new test. So just buyer beware. So you're welcome to read that blog. Now, before I start talking about the SAT, I do want to talk about the ACT, just so that you understand the differences and which one you should take, or neither, or both. You know, about 20 years ago, it really made a huge difference on which test a child took, SAT or ACT, because it depended on where you lived and where you wanted to go to school. So, for example, up north, it was more of a tradition to take the ACT because that's what schools preferred. Down south, maybe the west or east coast, it was more the SAT. Nowadays, it really does not matter. Every single college, 100% of every college takes either test. They really don't care anymore. It's really a preference of the student. Now, sometimes a school might prefer one over the other. So what they'll do is they'll convert the score. So, for example, if your child took the SAT and got a 1300 around there on the SAT math and critical reading section, that is considered a 29 on the ACT and vice versa. Now, how are these tests similar? Well, they're similar in the fact that both are used for college entrance and both are used for scholarship money. The highest score you can get on an ACT is a 36. But they're different in the fact that the SAT is that reasoning, critical thinking test, and the ACT is more of a content-based test, which does contain the trigonometry, the science, but it does contain critical thinking. So many of my students over the years have used the strategies in my program and applied them for the ACT and still got a perfect score because there's a crossover of information. Now, one of the cool things that you're going to learn today is that the strategies that work on the SAT not only work on the PSAT and on the ACT, but they can be used on other tests such as AP courses, which are made by the College Board, you know, subject tests, which are made by the College Board, which really aren't much about subject. They're really more about test-taking strategies. Even the GRE, which is created by the College Board. My daughter got free grad school because the strategies work. My son got free law school. Again, the LSAT is just another one of those logic tests. So you're going to be taking tests the rest of your life, you, your students, everyone. And so it's really great to know that these strategies can be applicable to lots of different tests. So let's talk about the SAT. SAT, the acronym SAT really doesn't stand for anything anymore. At one time it did. But I like to call it a standardized assessment test. Because when the College Board writes this test, they use the same standards, same patterns, same profiles over and over again. That is why this test can be figured out. It actually cost them $625,000 just to create one test because they want to make sure that every test is just the same and equal with every other test that they've created. That's why it's standardized. And that's why students can do very well in this test once they understand that basically it's the same concepts and ideas every time. So this is really just a test of logic and critical thinking. Now, the problem is, you know, like I said earlier, is a lot of kids run out of time. They don't finish the time. They might get a lot of questions right, but of course, they're simply working out everything the long way. But the SAT is really more of a weeding out process. You know, the colleges are looking for the critical thinkers. And like I said, every answer can be answered in 30 seconds or less. The SAT itself is almost 4 hours long. But again, it's a learnable test, and there's only one right answer. So keep in mind, this test is objective, not subjective. Which in many cases, a lot of students will, you know, get a lot of answers wrong because they think that, you know, more than one could work. But there's always going to be only one right answer. And of course, I guess the reason why I see so many valedictorians and students who are in the top 10%, you know, approach this test as if it was more of an IQ test, often will bomb it because they don't realize that these questions are tricky and they're purposely misleading. And oftentimes the wrong answers look very appealing. But, you know, again, it has the same basic concepts and standards every time. Now, what I'm going to show you today are ways that you can cut your time in half and answer every question correctly. And not only why the right answers are right, but also why the wrong ones are wrong. So on the SAT and PSAT, there are three sections: critical reading, math, and writing. Now, again, the SAT is changing in the spring of 2016. They're actually taking a lot of information away, and we'll talk more about that as we get to each section But as of now, critical reading, math, and writing. And the tests are similar in the fact that not only are they both written by the College Board, they have the same type of questions that have that same logic and reasoning. So if a student is studying for one, they're basically studying for the other one. Now, the difference between the SAT and the PSAT is the PSAT does not contain an essay or Algebra 2. And, of course, certainly it's shorter. It's 2 hours and 20 minutes long, and the SAT is 3 hours and 45 minutes long. Now, let me give you a few important facts about the SAT. The most a student can get is 2,400. That is where every section is worth 800 points. Now, according to the College Board, the average SAT score is around 1,007. That is math and critical reading. The average SAT score to get into college is around 1,210. This means that the average student is about 200 points below the average score just to get into college. Now, that doesn't even count getting scholarship money or going to more of a top-tier school or even an Ivy League school. So keep that in mind, because that means that can make a huge difference for a student either getting into college or even being able to get some scholarship money. Now, the SAT is offered 7 times a year. The first one is in October and the last one is in June. Now, there are no penalties for taking the test as many times as you want. You know, I teach in many, many public and private schools, and oftentimes the students have been told to not take the test more than a couple of times, that it's not a good idea. But that is actually false. You can take this test as many times as you want. Colleges are basically just going to take the highest scores. And many colleges will do what's called a super score. That is where you can take the SAT one time and get a really great math score. And let's say you take it another time and you get a really great critical reading score. Then the colleges will take the high score from different tests, put them together to give you an overall super score, which certainly is higher and obviously more money. And the great thing is you don't have to send every score to every school if you don't want to. This is called score choice. This allows you or your student to pick the score that you want and send it to the school that you want whenever you want. Now, to take the SAT, the fee right now is around $50, $52, which is on the College Board website. Now, you can get waivers. Now, waivers are where your student can get up to 4 free tests per year in the junior and the senior year. And they can also get the PSAT paid for as well as subject test paid for. Now, since most of you are homeschoolers out there, you would simply want to talk to the local guidance counselor of the school near you or another school and ask them how to apply for that waiver. Now, for the SAT, students sign up by mail or by the website, which is collegeboard.com. Now, let me give you a few important facts about the PSAT. Now, the most you can get is 240. It still has the same 3 sections until it changes. Math, critical reading, and writing, which are worth 80 points, which means the most you can get is a 240. Now, it is only offered once a year. Usually, it's the third Wednesday or third Saturday of October. Now, the great thing about the PSAT is, again, it can be taken multiple times. I highly recommend that all 9th graders take the PSAT, and certainly take it again in the 10th grade as well. But the junior year is the year that it counts for scholarships. So it doesn't matter, you know, what they do in the other years, whatever their score is. Those are simply used for your child to go in there, get familiar with that testing environment. And the great thing about you being able to have that experience of taking it early, you're not putting all your eggs in one basket in that junior year, is your students can really get the feel for what it's like to actually sit down in a testing environment that they may not be familiar with. Now, what happens is, if you will use the homeschool code for your state, and that can be found certainly at the College Board website, or you can Google that, then what happens is your student will get their test booklet back in the mail. They'll take the test in October, they'll get the booklet back in November, and then they'll get their scores in December. Now, once you get those scores back, you can compare to that booklet that you received back in November, and you can go over their questions and see what their weaknesses are and give you a chance to really work on it and figure out what they're doing wrong, especially when you start your kids earlier, 8th, 9th grade. You have time to really work and figure out what you're doing wrong. Now, the average junior PSAT score is a 141. That's, of course, out of a 240. Now, to find the homeschool code, it is very important that you do put that homeschool code on the test booklet. Otherwise, the test booklet will go to the school that they actually took the test at, and they may or may not ever see it again. So, for example, I live in Texas, and so our code is 994499. The 44, the two numbers in the middle, are what your state is alphabetically. So Texas is the 44th state alphabetically. Now, scores are going to vary for scholarships depending on where you live. Now, generally, the top 2-3% of each state are taken overall. For example, in Texas last year, it was a little high. It was about 219. It had been around 216 the last few years as an average. Florida is about 214. You know, Mississippi, 207. Wyoming, 203. They base it pretty much on the population of how many kids are taking the test. So as you can see, maybe a state like Wyoming that's probably not really populated has a lot less students taking the test, so the scores are certainly going to be lower. So you can actually Google what the 2013 cutoff scores were for your state. There are three initial levels of awards. The semifinalist, which is the one that you want to achieve, first of all, is, for example, that 219 in Texas or whatever it is. Now, if your student doesn't quite make that 219 or 216 or whatever, maybe they fall 5 to 10 points below that, they will be called commended or commendable. But if they do become a semifinalist, becoming a finalist is simply just a matter of filling out all the paperwork and getting it in on time by the deadline. If you haven't heard my radio show on Secrets of the PSAT, you definitely want to listen to that because that really gives you a lot more insight into this very exciting test that can yield amazing scholarships. Now, once your student becomes a finalist, then they'll take about 8,000 of those students to become National Merit Scholars. On both tests, right now we have what's called the critical reading section. Now, there are two parts, passage-based reading and sentence completion. Now, on the passage-based reading, there are three types of passages. There's a long passage, which contains several paragraphs. There is a short passage, which contains about one paragraph. And then there are what's called the dual passage section, where the student will be given two totally different passages that are connected by some sort of common topic. They might agree with each other, they might disagree with each other, or they might even compliment one another. And they'll be going to be given questions about both passages. I would tell you right now that having taught my program for 10 years, that the critical reading passage-based section is the most hated section, even more than math. And the reason why is the students are given up to 4 passages, 24 questions, and about 25 minutes to do it in. So we're talking about a minute per question, and that doesn't even count the passages. So students are going to approach the passage-based reading a lot like they would maybe a passage reading in their English class. They're going to read the passage, they're going to try to analyze it, maybe try to interpret it, and unfortunately run out of time. But the great news about this section is there are only three types of questions. There is what's called the line citation question. This is where they'll be given something like, in line 12, what was the author thinking? The second type of question is called the vocabulary use question. This is where the question is going to ask something like, what does the word help mean in line 4? And then the last type of question is called the overall passage question, where the students will be given a question something like, what's the main idea or the main facts about the passage? Now, once students learn to discern each question type, then they're going to understand how to answer each one because they're answered differently. Now, how many of you out there, you or your students, second guess yourself or overthink the question? Yes, that is probably one of the biggest problems in this section for most students. Most students may read the question and possibly pick the right answer, but then they look at the other 4 answers and then they start second guessing themselves or overthinking, overanalyzing it, how it could be another one of the answers. Well, this is exactly how the test is designed to make you do that. And of course, when students do that, certainly they're going to get the wrong answers. But I'm going to talk to you and show you the 4 trick answers, the 4 hidden patterns that the College Board uses to make you second guess yourself, to make you overthink the question. It is what I call COAT. That's my acronym, COAT. So your students are going to be given four hidden patterns that will cause them to pick the wrong answer. And learning to discern these four answer choices that are wrong will make a huge difference in acing this test. So generally, most students will read the question, they'll look at the five answer choices, and go through each one. This is the wrong way to do it. What you want to do is read the question and eliminate the four wrong answers first. Once you can do that, that's going to leave you with only one right answer. So I'm going to give you the four hidden tricks that the College Board uses so that your students won't second guess themselves or overthink the questions anymore. So the C in COAT, completely irrelevant information. This is an answer choice that has nothing to do with a question. It might even be relevant to another part of the passage, but it's completely relevant to that particular question there. O, obscure. This is confusing information to trick the students into thinking, well, maybe this one's right. A, additional information. This is where there'll be extra stuff in the answer choice that wasn't originally found in the citation or the question. T, totally contradictory. In other words, the student will be given an answer choice that really says the opposite of what they're looking for. Now, once a student can discern these four answer choices that are wrong and eliminate them first, it's going to leave them with the one right answer that does not break any of these four rules. You've got to justify every answer from the text. If you can't, it is not the right answer. On your paper there for your handout, and if you didn't download it, you can get it at collegeprepgenius.com/ACSAT radio. This example, we've got a sentence where it says, historians have shown that Edwin Stevens' brother was nearly deaf, which may explain the tremendous time that Stevens spent on inventing the hearing aid. And then the question says, according to line 4, historians suggest that Stevens invented the hearing aid because A, his brother couldn't hear the train that ran near his home. Now, what you will have noticed in the passage that there was information talking about a train. And, you know, if we had a brother or family member that was deaf, certainly that would be very important to us that our loved one didn't get run over by the train, that they could hear the train. And so this answer could work if you start overanalyzing, you start overthinking it. But again, this question adds extra additional information that wasn't found in the citation. His brother's perfect hearing inspired him to help others. Well, again, we know that it says he was nearly deaf, so this is totally contradictory. He wanted to listen to the birds sing in the morning. And again, be very, very careful because the question is asking why Stevens invented the hearing aid, not so much what the motivation of the brother was. So that, again, some additional information. D, his brother invested in the discovery of his hearing problems. That's basically a little obscure, a little confusing. E, his brother faced a challenge in his hearing. Now notice that E basically restates the citation where it talks about he was nearly deaf. So that is our correct answer. All right, the next question there on your paper. Adam's grandmother neatly packed two snacks for him in his lunch sack. He couldn't wait to discover their identity because he knew they were always unique and yummy. And the question? Why does the author mention Adam's daily routine? A, to show how poor the family was and couldn't afford a lunchbox. That's pretty obscure there, so obviously it's a wrong answer. B, to relay the grandmother's love for Adam. Now, this answer is a very tricky answer, and it gets picked very often because it would appear that his grandmother loved him. Imagine getting up every day and creating two very unique and different and yummy snacks. But this answer is incorrect because this adds additional information. The question is asking about Adam, not the grandmother or what the grandmother's motivation was. C, to compare how a good lunch helps a student excel. Well, oftentimes answer choices contain information that's very true. You know, we know how important it is to have a good breakfast, a good lunch, to do well in school. We know all that. So oftentimes truth is thrown in there to make you think, well, yeah, that makes sense. But again, this answer is completely irrelevant to what the question's asking. D, portray the grandmother's desire to please the household. Again, we're seeing something about the grandmother's motivation. So again, some additional extra information. E, to reveal how he, which is Adam, loved his grandmother's treats. Okay, so again, you've got to be very careful to not overthink, overanalyze, or even start to second guess yourself on the answer choices. Find what's wrong first, eliminate it, and be left with the correct answer. Now, the critical reading sentence completion section, this is where students will be given a sentence that will contain either one or two blanks. Now, a lot of times students will read the sentence and they pick, you know, a word that sounds good. Again, very wrong way to approach this type of question. There are 8 key elements to look for when it comes to a sentence completion question. I'm going to talk about a couple of them here. For example, if you have like a comma, colon, semicolon, the key to the blank is going to be found in the other half of the sentence that doesn't contain the blank. So you're going to read the sentence. You're not going to bring any outside information. You're just going to find your answer inside the sentence. So here are some important points. The correct answer must fit perfectly. You can't shoehorn it in. Number 2, it's got to be a descriptive word. And number 3, it's going to restate the other half of the sentence without the blank. So there on your paper, let's go over the sentence. The human body is designed to be blank. Every organ is supported by another system that functions together to run smoothly. So notice right there we have a colon. So you're going to circle that colon. That is your key element. Now you're going to want to take your pencil and cut your sentence in half right there at the colon. Now that tells you that the key to that blank is found in the second half of the sentence, which does not contain the blank. So every organ is supported by another organ that runs together smoothly. That's the kind of descriptive word we're looking for that restates that. A, perfect. Now that's a little tricky answer, but it doesn't restate the second half, so be careful. B, flawed. Well, obviously that's contradictory. If everything runs together smoothly, that's opposite. Endured. You know, lasting a long time. Again, yes, certainly, but it's not the perfect fit. D, efficient. That sounds like something that runs together smoothly. Now remember, on this test, you never mark an answer unless you are 100% sure it is the right answer. By marking a wrong answer or by guessing on this test can cost you points. Points can drop your score. An average student drops their SAT score by 200 points simply by guessing or randomly bubbling in or not understanding that points are taken away. So don't answer it unless you're sure. E, mobile. Yes, that's true. We are designed to move around, but again, that's not the perfect fit. So D, efficient, does restate the second half. All right, next example on your paper. Katie was a blank editor, always overlooking typos and content errors. Now notice we've got a comma. So if we circle our comma and we cut our sentence in half, the key to our blank is found in the second half, some word that restates overlooking typos and errors. A, Katie was a dabster. Now let's just suppose for a moment that you don't know what dabster means, okay? Just for a moment, let's just be hypothetical, okay? Now, here's the key to when it comes to an unknown word. Skip it. In other words, don't automatically pick it or don't automatically mark it off. Simply put a star by it next to it and skip it. Then you want to test the other 4 answers. If you find the correct answer, great, you can mark off the unknown word. If you don't find the right answer, that means the unknown word is the correct answer. You don't have to know vocabulary words to ace this test. I mean, there's 171,000 words in the dictionary. So where do you start? The key is knowing that this is really just a logic test. So don't get hung up on big words. Understand that this is strategies. So we're going to skip Dabster for a moment. Be popular. Well, obviously, popular doesn't fit. It doesn't restate the second half of overlooking errors. Proficient. That's pretty contradictory. D, rude. Now, Katie might have been rude. Again, we don't know, but that really, again, is irrelevant. That doesn't have anything to do with the second half. E, careless. Yeah, careless does sound like someone who overlooks typos and errors. So this means that E is our answer, which means you can confidently mark off A, Dabster, even if you don't know what it means, because there's only one right answer. And by the way, Dabster means proficient. All right, let's move on to math. Okay, now, how many of you out there hate math, or you have at least one child that hates math? Well, here's the good news. You don't have to be a math genius to ace the math part. It's not even a math test. You know what it really is? It's really a logic test using math as the medium. Now, certainly you have to know your basic math. I mean, you've got to know how to add and subtract, and you do need a little bit of geometry and algebra under your belt. But you don't have to be some sort of math whiz. I mean, many students have come to my class and have told me that they love math and they're really good at it and it's their number one subject, but it tends to be their lowest score on the test, on the SAT. And that's because mainly they are approaching it like normal math class. Remember, you've only got a minute per question, so you don't have time to work out every problem the long way and show all your work. So let me go over some important points about the math. There are two sections to the math, multiple choice and student response. Now, multiple choice is where you're given 5 answer choices, and student response is where you are given 0 answer choices. Now, important points, number one, it's easy math. It really is. It's not trigonometry or calculus or college math, most basic math. It's really just disguised in a logic question. Number two, you've got to learn the recurring hidden patterns that the college board uses over and over again on every single question. Even the multiple choice section, they use the same pattern on every question where you can eliminate anywhere from 60% of your answers immediately if you understand that hidden pattern. Number three, you've got to find the shortcuts. I mean, like I said earlier, every math problem can be answered in 30 seconds or less and without a calculator. And number four, you've got to learn to read very carefully with a critical eye. Remember, these questions are designed to trick the students, so be very, very careful. Now, let's look at our first problem here. What is the product of these two numbers? Pretty big numbers there. Well, here's the key. Simply look at the last two digits, 2 and 3. So 2 times 3 is 6, and this means your answer will end in 6. It's a very fun and easy strategy that students can use not only on like multiplying or dividing or adding, but even when it comes to factors or properties, just train yourself to look at the last digits. All right, the next problem here, you've got a bunch of fractions. And most students are going to multiply all those numerators, and then they're going to multiply all the denominators, and then they're going to reduce it a couple of times. But notice how you can eliminate, you can cross-eliminate the 5s, the 7s, the 9s, and the 11s. And that simply leaves you 3 over 13, which of course is answer A. The last math question I'm going to show you says, how many different integers n will make the following statement true? 6 is less than 4n, which is less than 10. All right, now look at our answer choices. You want to throw out a guess out there? Be careful. Read very critically. It is not what you think the question is asking. Most students, most people in general, automatically gravitate to answer B, which is 2. Because 6 is less than 4 times 2, which of course is 8, which is less than 10. That is a true statement, which is answer B. But that's not the correct answer. Because what is the question really asking? notice it says how many different integers. So how many different ones? Only one, which of course is answer A. Now let's move on to the writing section. In the writing section, there are four sections: the essay, sentence error, improving sentences, and improving paragraphs. Now, I want to talk about the dreaded essay. Most students hate the essay. And even in spring of 2016, when they changed the SAT, they're going to make the essay optional. But let me give you some words of wisdom here. Most people don't realize that if a college admission counselor is on the fence about a student's application, they will use the writing section as the determining factor. So if you've got a student who wrote the essay and you have a student who did not write the essay, then what does that tell you? Who are they going to gravitate to? So very, very important to understand to always write that essay, even when it becomes optional. Now, I want to go over some important points about the essay. When it comes to grading this essay, these judges start grading papers from 7 o'clock in the morning until 10 o'clock at night for 10 days. Now, they're going to read the paper one time through very quickly and write down their first impression, which is anywhere from 1 to 6. Then after they do that, they're going to go back through it, kind of skim it, look for just a few key things, and they're going to spend about 30 seconds grading the paper. So we're not talking that they're looking for what an amazing writer your student is. They're talking about finding a very objective way of grading a bunch of subjective papers. So they have just a few key things that they look for. So 30 seconds is all they're going to give your child. Now, number two, when it comes to the essay, it's very, very important that you pick one side only. If you want to drop your score, which is what the average student does, from a 6 to a 3, talk about both sides. We don't want to do that. It doesn't matter which subject, which side, whether they agree, whether they disagree. Just pick one or the other. And number three, when it comes to topics, even though your student's not going to know them ahead of time, it's going to be something more general about solve a moral dilemma or talk about a turning point. It really doesn't even matter what the topic is about because, you know, we teach kids how to write 75% of their essay before they ever walk in the door. Number four, sound smart. Very, very important because these judges are grading so many papers. And when they get to your child's paper, you want them to say, wow, that's the smartest sounding paper I've read in 3 days. And that will ultimately give them the highest score, which of course is a 6. When they put both scores together, 12 is a perfect score. And the last thing you want to end with what I call a razzle dazzle. In other words, the very last line is so important what your child puts there, because as soon as the judge, he or she, reads that very last line, they immediately put down their first impression from a 1 to 6. And of course, we definitely want that to be a high score because they rarely change that more than 1 point. So now, I want to give you a couple example topics. Has the World Wide Web turned out to be a better resource for information than the public library? All right, do I have any answers out there? This is simply a yes or no question. Yes, it has, or no, it has not. Remember, pick one side or the other. There are no wrong answers. You don't even have to agree with that side. The point of the matter is that you take a stand and you defend that stand and don't talk about the other side as well. So either yes, it is, or no, it's not. But don't talk about how wonderful the internet is and also how wonderful the library is, because now you've simply dropped your score to a 3. All right, next example. Does the news media help or hinder our insight into what is going on around the world? Okay, any answers out there? Or hinder? That's right, one or the other. Now, I know as well as you do, sometimes the media helps us, sometimes the media hinders us. I get that, but don't play both sides of the fence. Again, just pick one side or the other, and it does not matter which one. The judges are not biased on the side that you choose. So it makes no difference, just one or the other. The last step I'm going to go over is one part of the writing portion called improving sentences. Now, this is where your student will be given a sentence that part of it is underlined, and they're going to have to find the best restatement for that particular underlined portion. So this first example says, like all new animals, the zoo's new surroundings baffle the panda bear during his first visit. And then we're given 5 answer choices. Now, most students are going to read that sentence, and then what they're going to do is they're going to read all 5 answers. Total waste of time. Because what you have to notice here is there are recurring patterns that the College Board uses here to where you can eliminate answers quickly. Remember, we don't have to read all 5 answers. Whether we're dealing with math, critical reading, writing, we know there are recurring patterns that we can use. So notice that 3 of the answer choices, A, B, and E, start off with the zoo's new surrounding. And C and D start off with the panda bear. So this tells us that right away we can eliminate 2 or even possibly 3 answers. So the key is that word right before the underlying portion, animals. So we're going to have to modify that word. So are we going to start off with the zoo's new surroundings or the panda bear? Yes, the panda bear certainly is the animal. So that means we automatically eliminate 60% A, B, and E. Now we're only left with 2 answers. We didn't have to read those answers. The panda bear was baffled by the zoo's new surroundings, or the panda bear who found the zoo's new surroundings baffling. Yes, C, very good. It's very clear. It's certainly concise, the best restatement. All right, the next answer, edit. All right, the next example. Unable to overcome his fear of flying, the airplane made an emergency landing when Jeff asked to be let off the flight. Now, again, notice the 5 answer choices. Notice the pattern. The patterns are A and B both start off with the airplane. C, D, and E start off with Jeff. Now, notice in the first part of the sentence, it says his fear of flying. So his, would that refer to the airplane or would that refer to Jeff? Certainly Jeff. So that means we can automatically eliminate both A and B. Now, if you look at the answer choices, and again, there's a really cool pattern that you learn in my classroom, how you could have figured it out with even having to read the last 3 answers. But let's read them anyways. Jeff's request to be let off the flight meant that the airplane was forced to make an emergency landing. Very long and wordy, a little confusing. D, Jeff's request to be let off the flight meant that the airplane was forced to make a landing. Again, a little obscure, confusing there. E, Jeff asked to be let off the flight and the airplane made an emergency landing. So it's very clear and concise and very much to the point. So what are the keys to acing this test? Find the easy and fast answers to every math problem. Whether you love math or hate math, it doesn't matter. There's an easy way to find a quick math solution without having to work out every problem and show your work. There's no need to. The College Board doesn't even ever look inside your booklet. The only thing that's graded is that little bubbled-in sheet that they put through a machine. Number 2, know the secret to writing a perfect essay. The judges are only looking for a few key things. And by just knowing those few key things, it doesn't even matter what the topic is about. You can pretty much compile your essay, 75% of it, before you ever approach that day of the test and simply fill in the final 25%. Number 3, discover the shortcuts to conquering the reading passages. Students can pretty much skip 70% of that passage. It's unnecessary. It's long. It's boring. It has too much information. It's purposely set up that way. Number 4, learn the hidden recurring patterns that point you to the answer. It's really cool when you learn how the patterns are on every question. And once you learn those recurring patterns that are on every test, then students can go in there and sit down and have that confidence on acing this test. Number 5, identify the logical answers in every problem. Approach this test from a logical standpoint, not from how smart you are or how smart you don't think you are, about how can I look at this question logically and what is it really asking? What's it really saying to me? And practice the correct way using test-taking strategies. Once you learn strategies and shortcuts, the only right way to practice for this test is to use College Board materials. The College Board, they are the company that make the SAT. They're the company that make the PSAT. Don't spend any money on any product that is not College Board, because they have real test questions. And things that you learn will only be relevant to their test. They don't give me any money for endorsing their products. So only get College Board products. You can get them from the College Board website. You can get them Barnes & Noble. Most guidance counselors have actual test questions in their office, booklets that they get every year, even old ones that you can ask for. You can download a free test from the website. I mean, you can get the question of the day. So, again, only College Board questions. And, of course, the key, start early. Put time on your side. I mean, you wouldn't learn to play the piano a week before a concert. I mean, you would be humiliated because you don't know what you're doing. You know, you learn a few keys and some chords and you practice over a period of time until you're confident of how to play that piano. It's the same thing with this test. You know, learning the strategies, getting familiar with the questions, you know, being able to discern the wrong answer types, that doesn't happen overnight. There's no instant success in that. It's like anything else, whether it's sports or the piano or guitar, anything that you want to be good at, you learn how to do it, and then, of course, you spend time working on it. So start early. Now, it's not like if you've got a senior right now and they can't do well. I've had many kids go up 300 points in a week. But ultimately, you want to incorporate that into your school, into your life, to where it becomes second nature to your student. So bottom line is, why ACSAT? Because the SAT determines, number one, where you get to go to college and who's going to pay. That is why colleges will covet you with these test scores, because you ultimately make them look good. You know, a 4.0 at one high school is not the same 4.0 at another high school. Every school weighs and calculates their scores differently. So does every homeschooler. So the only way a college can fairly compare, let's say, a public school student in one state versus a private school student in another versus a homeschool student in another is the SAT, because it levels the playing field. So the 5 P's of success are: proper preparation prevents poor performance. So make this a priority. Incorporate the SAT because it can be figured out. You know, our goal has always been to help students learn this test and be able to ace it and be able to get into the college of their choice and be able to get scholarship money. You know, it takes an average student 20 years, 2 decades of their life to pay off college loans. So you don't want that for your child. So I'm really excited today. I hope you've learned some stuff on acing the test, knowing how important it is and how important it is to start early, no matter what age your child is. So I'm going to tell you how to get my 15 Secrets to Free College ebook. It's normally $9.95 on my website. If you will go to my website, collegeprepgenius.com, and click on the 15 Secrets ebook, and then put in the code RADIO, R-A-D-I-O, you will get that for a penny. Now, here's the homework that I want to give you for this week. It's very important that you know your starting point of your student. You need a baseline score. So if your child has not taken an actual SAT or an actual PSAT, then this is what you need to do. You need to see where they're at. Let them know there's no pressure. And it's absolutely free. This is the website that you need to go to if you don't have one there at your home. Of course, you can always pick up a free test at the guidance counselor office. But you can also download one from online. If you go to sat.collegeboard.org/practice/SAT-practice-test. Now, if you don't remember that, just go to the College Board website, collegeboard.com or collegeboard.org, click on SAT, and then click on free practice test. You can find it there as well. So have your child take that test as a good baseline score. Let them know, doesn't matter what it is. We just want to see where you're at. We want to go look at some college websites and kind of see what the minimum score is to get in. And then kind of go from there, like, where do we need to go from here? So hopefully this has helped you this week on acing the test. If you have any questions about this test or want to know more about how our program can help your child ace these tests, or maybe you even say, well, I'd love y'all to come to my city, my state, and teach the program. All that information is on our website, or you can certainly email us at info@collegeprepgenius.com, or you can call our office during the week, 817-282-7737. Thank you so much, and I look forward to talking with you next time.